you're anything like me, you are a huge fan of true crime and dark humor merchandise. Otis B. Dredd's here to tell you about the best place to get all of your true crime and dark humor swag. Try TrueCrime7.store. True crime, spell out 7, SEVEN.store. The only place you need to go for true crime and dark humor. I'm going to tell you what, this place has some really great prices. You can't beat their prices. 30-day money-back guarantee if you are not happy, and I guarantee you will be. Free shipping on order, $75 and up. 24-hour online support. What kind of stuff can you get, Otis, you may be asking? You can get t-shirts, you can get hoodies, coffee mugs, cutting boards, posters, pillows, and if you search for them over there on Amazon, you can also check out their reading material. That's right, they publish books as well. Stay up to date with all the new merchandise and great deals on all their products. Follow them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, sign up for their newsletter and get all the latest info about new products. I'll tell you what, you are not going to regret going to TrueCrime7.store, and at the checkout, don't forget promo code NLD to get you a 10% discount on your entire order. That's right, TrueCrime7, SEVEN.store. Tell them Otis sent you. And remember, stay curious, keep it creepy, and don't get murdered.
Hi, this is David Howard Thornton, but you might know me as Art the Clown from the movie Terrifier, and you're listening to the Night of the Living Dreads podcast. Kill you later.
Dreadlocked hippie, little Donnie Vapor, he was feeling rough. When he went to pack a bowl, someone had smoked his stuff. Oh, Otis the dirty hippie puffed up all Don's trees. And when Don asked him to re-up, he told him, nigga, please. Otis the dreadlocked dragon, soon he flew away to look for weed in a far-off land and take some from SJ. SJ had a kingdom, beside him was his queen, and when it came to sharing bud, Queen Amber was not keen. The noblemen still smoked with them in honored Puff Puff Pass. But Otis tried to steal the stash, so Amber kicked his ass. Oh, Otis the weedless dragon flew off in a huff. He needed to score, cause life's a bore without some green to puff. Otis the dreadlocked dragon came up with a plan. He'd search his phone and call the home of his former weed man. He called and called forever, but got no reply. It seemed that Otis was just fucked when it came to getting high. Then one night it happened, Otis got a call. He'd been approved for his green card and he said, fuck all of y'all. He said, be there tomorrow to ease up all his pain. Otis then fell right asleep and dreamed of Mary Jane. He thought this silly saga makes no sense to me. But fuck that shit, I will be lit when I hit the dispensary. Oh, Otis the dreadlocks dragon soon bought all the weed. Hikers blend strawberry cough without a single seed. Otis the stoner dreadhead flew to Ohio. Bought some mics and mixers too, and came up with this show.
That's absolutely beautiful, Mrs. Dredd. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
You didn't like that?
I didn't say I didn't like it.
Okay.
I wouldn't call it beautiful, but
I my eyes water up.
Because it's about you.
It is, and that somebody took the time to actually sing a song about me. But I love the story behind it. You don't even get that part, do you? You don't see the struggles. I went, Otis the dreadlock dragon, okay? I went from stealing everyone's pot to getting his own and not having to, he put that, that thief life down. It's a
because nobody
story.
Wanted you around them.
Well, it's a positive story nonetheless. I think. All right. Night of the Living Dreads podcast. That's right. I am Otis B. Dreads. I am the dragon that was done there by our very own patient, Mr. SJ Slender Moo. I gotta give it up for
what
you
he
right
does
there.
During arts and crafts.
It is right, arts and crafts, and he makes very cool little songs.
He's done quite a few.
He has. If you go back and listen to some of our Christmas Slaycation, he did quite a few parodies there that I thought was very humorous. It was all his idea. He does a great job. Thank you, SJ. He is not here with us this evening. But it is myself, Otis B. Dreads, and Mrs. Dreads there. How are you, Mrs. Dreads?
Meh.
Meh. What's that mean?
Little under the weather.
Little under the weather.
Yeah, but I'm here.
Well, what does that mean?
I go into
detail. Did you party like a rock star last night?
No.
Did you party too hard?
No.
We did have a cookout.
Yeah.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. And I heard you mention earlier, our youngest daughter stopped by earlier today, and I heard you mention to her that you got this, like, Smirnoff red, white, and berry.
I normally don't get Smirnoff.
Right. Yeah,
everybody talked about how they tasted.
Right.
They do. They're really good. They taste like
but
a
you,
bomb
you,
pop.
But you drank, like, fucking 12 of them.
Yeah.
And
Nothing.
Now, and you don't even drink.
Right.
I mean, you're not a drinker like, Otis B. Dredge drinking up all the milk.
Oh, it seemed like it's that it spiked my sugar.
Right. Yeah, well, probably. It's probably 98% fucking sugar and just a little splash of fucking Smirnoff.
Yeah, but I wasn't drunk.
You know why you can't find vodka in a liquor store?
Oh, my geez, because it's Smirnoff.
The label is Smirnoff.
Yeah.
Right. Also, who else is not here? Mr. Don Skrull. I'm sure he will be back, a.k.a. Chilla the Clown, when you're perusing Facebook. You go to Night of the Living Dreads, our group, our page, nightoflivingdreads.com. No A, of course. Also, check out our dear, dear friend just to the south of us, Mrs. Dreads. He's not that far from us. Chiller. No. He's not that far.
Mm-mm.
Mr. Don Skrull. Check his page out. Chiller presents Carnival of Souls on Facebook. Check him out. Get over there. A lot of scare acting. I mean, if you don't like clowns, this is probably not the place you want to go. Unless you want to face your fucking fear.
Because they got some creepy ones.
They do. There are, man. Scurry Face, S-C-U-R-R-Y face.com.
Mm-hmm.
That is the big scare acting hub.
Yeah, and they hold a lot of contests, so go over there and vote.
Yes. Scurryface.com. Is he even still in it? I saw the last, the last three.
He was. I just voted for him not too long ago.
Right.
Like 2 days ago.
Right. I think that's over. I don't know if he made it. I'm not sure, man. Maybe.
He normally does. He normally
I know. He's made it so far in this, but the scare actor spooktacular. I don't know if that's the fucking name, but it's what I'm going to throw on it.
I think it is.
All right. So I lucked out.
Maybe. I don't know.
You know what's spooky, Mrs. Dreads?
What?
Fucking kids that, kids. All right, what's worse? I went back and forth in my head. Okay, what's worse? Is it worse to have a child that, let's say, at 10, 11 years old, if not, God forbid, younger, kill themselves or kill another person?
I don't know.
What is worse? I really have been going back and forth because both are absolutely horrible. Both, present a different form of rage and whatnot. I'll let you think on that for a little bit because we're going to talk about child killers. And we got some good ones. I came across a YouTube video, and we're going to play, a little bit of this. You're not going to hear a whole lot of us during this. Oh, you probably will me, because I'm always interrupting. Always. But this comes from, I'll even give them a, good night, what I do. I'll give them a little shout out. Here we go. Scary Mysteries YouTube channel. They have the top five most terrifying killer kids. You listened to some of these earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think about it? I mean, we're gonna get into
very disturbing.
Yeah, it is. We're gonna get into this, and we're gonna play you the easy around the dust there.
You said easy around the dust.
Yeah, right. Because she's what Mrs. Dredge is doing is she is wiping dust off the Rodecaster and getting near very sensitive buttons that I don't want to interrupt this shitstorm.
No, because I can't control myself.
You can't. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to play you some of, these... we're going to play five. You're going to go through five. And then our big one is going to be one Mary Bell. You like Mary, don't you?
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, I'm impressed by her story.
Really?
Can't say I would be best friends with her on the street or anything.
Why not?
No.
All right, man. You are not very. All right, I'm
I couldn't think of anything on why I wouldn't be friends with her.
Okay. All right. We're let's get into this. Let's go. Hold on, man. I apparently have there we go. Right there. This is great podcasting shit right here. All right, you ready, Mrs. Dredge?
Yep.
All right. Here's our first one, Eric Smith.
After lurking, here are the top five most horrifying killer kids. Number five, Eric Smith. At 13 years old, Eric Smith had thick aviator glasses, tussled red hair, and freckles. He looked like your typical American teen, but there was...
What he looked like was Opie. That's what he looked like.
Yeah.
Fucking Opie. Just saying.
Something different about him. At a young age, Eric was prone to explosive anger and violence. As a toddler, he would throw tantrums and bang his head on the floor for no reason. Later on, psychiatrists would diagnose him with intermittent explosive disorder, a mental problem causing sufferers to be violent and unpredictable. Add to the fact...
That's kind of how I do this show.
The fact that Eric was often bullied at school, and the boy became a ticking time bomb. On August 2nd, 1983, the bomb exploded. Summer camp had started, and 4-year-old Derek Robbie was walking to the park where the camp was held. It was only 2 blocks away from his home with no streets to cross. Eric chanced upon Derek walking alone, and he lured him into the nearby woods, explaining there was a shortcut. Without warning, Eric began strangling the little boy until he fell to the ground unconscious.
This boy was how old? 4 years old? Is that what they said? A 4-year-old boy. And he's like, yeah, come on. Why is a 4-year-old boy just walking around without his fucking parents?
Must have been a very trusting family.
You know what I'm saying? Because that just seems weird. And then Eric's like, come on, little Derek.
Come. Probably knew him.
Come to the woods. And maybe it was a trust thing. Maybe he did know him from the neighborhood and trust him. Yeah, I know a shortcut. Then all of a sudden, Eric just fucking strangles the fuck out of him and then does other things.
He then proceeded to pick up 2 large rocks, one after the other, and slam them into his head, resulting in the death of young Derek. Eric proceeded to undress the boy and sodomize him with a tree branch.
What? And we're watching this little video as we record this. This is a very cute little kid, young Derek, the victim here.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very cute little kid. What a fucking shame! Just unreal that all of a sudden Eric Smith decides, oh yeah, I'm just gonna just gonna choke the shit out of you and then fuck you in the ass with a tree limb.
Yep.
He rifled through his lunch bag, smashed a banana, and dumped red Kool-Aid over his mutilated face. By 11 a.m., Derek's mother, Doreen, arrived at the park to pick up her son, but was told he didn't arrive. Shortly after, a search operation was underway, and Derek's body was found. 4 days after this, Eric Smith walked into the police station and offered his help with the case. He gave information and asked questions in a somewhat gleeful way. The investigator didn't think much more of it, as it seemed simply like a child who wanted to play cop. That is, until he mentioned seeing Derek from across the street in an open field.
Wait a minute, what does that mean? A kid who wanted to play cop?
Like investigate?
Like he was trying to investigate the case with,
that's how they seen
with
it.
The cops.
Because of how he went in there.
Because he was all gleeful. He was happy to be there. Mm-hmm. It was like he was intrigued by all this, even though he was the little psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Which placed him at the crime scene. Eric was also able to describe Derek's clothes, including the lunch bag he had in his hand that day. 7 days after the murder, Smith confessed to killing Derek. He received the maximum jail sentence of 9 years to life, with parole eligibility every 2 years after the first 9 years. He's been denied every parole hearing and remains incarcerated to this day.
Okay. All right, so that was Eric Smith. And anything, I know I stumped it a lot. I was going to try not to do that. But anything you want to add to the story of Eric Smith?
Not really. He's a psycho.
Yeah, I'm.
Hope he never gets parole.
Sure. I mean, they didn't really go much into the, you know, childhood.
I'm sure that's just something that you could.
Maybe it was normal and it doesn't
do his name.
Yeah, true.
Pull up other stuff.
Yeah, could. Well, we're not diving deep into this one.
Right.
We're diving deep into Mary Bell, but we still have 4 more on the list. Next on the list. Christopher Pittman, age 12 when these murders occurred.
Number 4, Christopher Pittman. It was 2001, and at just 12 years old, Christopher Pittman was already getting into so much trouble that he decided to run away from home. When he was caught, he was placed in an institutional facility and given the antidepressant drug Paxil. He was then shuffled off to live with his grandparents, and with the new town and new home, there came a new doctor too. The Paxil was working for Chris, but wasn't available, so his new doctor prescribed Zoloft instead. Zoloft is known to induce various side effects in children, including aggression, hallucinations, depression, and delusions.
All right. Now, you already knew I was going to stop it during this one.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, the one out of the five that they really make a, you know, it's noted that he was on, you know, antidepressants. What do you, because you mentioned even earlier, you're like, yeah, I mean, come on, like that shit couldn't, you know, fucking cause this shit and his homicidal rage or whatever.
Right, because you get to hear later on about the side effects and stuff he was having from the medication, physical side effects and
it was
stuff, and it was all overlooked.
Right. So. Yeah. And then the doctors just turn around and, you know, just up the dosage.
Yeah. From 100 milligrams to 200.
Yeah, it is retarded.
Soon after the switch, Christopher began experiencing severe side effects, including a burning sensation all over his body. It got so bad he required additional pain medication. After his grandparents complained that he still felt the side effects, oddly, his Zoloft dosage was increased from 100 milligrams each day to 200 milligrams.
Okay. He's already, you know, showing signs.
Bad side effects, bad enough that they're giving him pain medication.
Pain medication. You know, and I mentioned earlier when we were looking through this that maybe it was an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
Okay, because his body feels like it's on fucking fire and it's causing, you know, pain all over his body. Maybe he's allergic to this shit.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they just pile more medication on top.
The same medication.
Yeah, well,
plus add on pain medication.
Pain medication, up his dose from 100 to 200 milligrams a day. Absolutely ridiculous. And they wonder why he ends up doing, you know, the horrible shit that, you know, he does. Not to take away from, you know, what the victims, you know, and the victim's family and everything lost, but I mean, come on, I see a couple victims here.
Mm-hmm.
Milligrams. Christopher's behavior started becoming more erratic. He ended up choking a fellow student after an argument on the bus. Later, he disturbed the individual playing piano inside his church. That night, he got into a fight with his grandfather and received a spanking. Mad with rage, he marched inside his grandparents' bedroom, took out the shotgun, which he had been taught to use, and shot both his grandparents.
All right, now he was what, 13? Is that what they said, 13, I think, when this happened? And what are you looking at? Oh, no, he's 12 there when it all started, but I'm saying at this particular incident, he was what, 13 when he got the spanking from Grandpa.
Right.
He got so pissed at this fucking, I'm right now, because, you know, we're going to be grandparents, and we are actually, but he's just not here. Are you going to be scared to, you know, bust your grandson's ass?
I wouldn't bust his ass anyway.
Really?
I
know, because he may blow your head off with a fucking shotgun.
Maybe.
Because that's pretty much how that all, you know, spiraled downward.
You can't even yell at the dog, so what makes you think you're going to bust your grandson's ass?
That's fucking true. I mean, Pittman at like 13 gets a little, you know, gets his ass busted. He's 13. I'm 13 years old. You can't bust my ass. I'll show you. And
yeah, you showed him, right?
Yeah. Fucking busted a cap in that ass.
Using paper and candles, he then set the house on fire and took his grandparents' car, their guns, his dog, and $33 and left.
$33. How far was he going to get? And it's funny because it shows a on this video, it shows a young Christopher Pittman
in the car,
in the fucking driver's seat with his seatbelt on.
Yeah, at least he put a seatbelt on.
Eventually picked up by police later that night, he told them he had been kidnapped by a man who killed his grandparents. After intense questioning, he eventually confessed to his crimes and even added that his grandparents deserved what they got.
All right. They deserved it? Why? Because Grandpa, and I won't even call him Pop-Pop. I won't even call him a Pop-Pop because he don't deserve that title. I'm a Pop-Pop. His Grandpa busted his ass. And they deserve what they got. They got a slug in the head.
Well, see, you don't know if he deserves a role as a Pop-Pop or not, because it never says that they mistreated him.
No, that's true.
It just said that he got in trouble and got his ass busted.
He got in trouble and got his ass busted. I'm saying that's what he's probably thinking. I don't know. All right. Let's go.
His trial centered on the controversial drug Zoloft and the effects it had on children.
Go figure.
The doctor who doubled his dosage was never charged for any crime. Currently, Christopher Pittman is still incarcerated and serving a 30-year-to-life sentence.
Okay, I find it pretty horrible that the doctor involved in upping his dosage, seeing that there were signs of him not, responding well, having side effects, and things of that nature, doubles his dosage, but yet nothing is done about that.
And he even started showing like aggressive behavior being on the medication.
Yes. What in the world was that? Was that a demon? Was that a fucking demon?
But
it's like some alien shit going on over here. Got my own little Sigourney Weaver. This shit's about to pop out of her chest.
just the picture that it shows with the whole disrupting the piano player.
Right, yeah. It's like Shadow.
Giving a piano player the finger.
Right. That's all it is. That's all it is. But, I mean, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that's what he did.
It's just funny.
Yeah.
The picture they have.
It is. It's like little shadow, picture. There's no, like, face. That is funny.
Just simple. That's how he disrupted him.
Right. By giving the piano player the fucking finger. Well, I salute you, my friend. I think we're about to the end of Christopher Pittman. I think this is about the end of that segment.
Oh, yeah,
It's close, if not. But we're getting ready to get into a Joshua Phillips, age 14. Hold on.
Number 3, Joshua Phillips. It was November 3rd, 1998, and 8-year-old Maddie Clifton had disappeared. Police and volunteers searched dumpsters in the surrounding woods near her home, hoping to find some sort of clue for her whereabouts. What they didn't know was that Maddie was right across the street from her house the whole time, stuffed underneath a waterbed inside her friend and playmate, 14-year-old Joshua Phillips' bedroom.
Hey, I just got to stop it right there. Really, already, her parents have no idea where she's at. She is literally under the mattress. At first I thought, man, it would be a really, cool horror movie to see, actual body in the fucking mattress, right?
Because goddamn, that'd be a kind of big hole that you'd have to put
right
in the mattress.
No wonder there was leaking. But no, under the fucking mattress of a 14-year-old right across the fucking street.
Have you ever lifted a waterbed mattress?
Yes.
With full of water?
Yes.
Those bitches are heavy.
You don't lift one with full water. You drain a lot of that shit out.
Well, he lifted some of it to put a body underneath it.
His was not, I don't think, a traditional because they have the mattress.
It was like one of those soda water beds.
Right.
It was like a mattress.
A mattress, but it had that water bed thing to it. Yeah, because they bring that mattress into the courtroom. All right. Joshua Phillips, please entertain the dreadheads, you sick little cunt.
Josh had no history of violence. He claimed that one afternoon, Maddie came over and invited him to play baseball. Maddie threw the ball, and he hit it, sending it back at her, accidentally hitting her in the eye, causing her to bleed. Panicked, Josh brought her inside his house. Josh's abusive father had a strict no-visitors policy, and afraid of what his reaction would be if he found her inside, he dragged Maddie into his bedroom and proceeded to strangle her with a phone cord for 15 minutes.
Now, you knew I was going to stop it here.
You say that every time when you stop it.
Because, all right, for one. What do you think about the whole baseball scenario?
And I know we talked about this. I think it could be plausible.
It is plausible, yes. But let's break it down. How does it become not plausible?
I just don't understand... The fact of it is, if he hit her, like intentionally hit her with his fist, why she would go back to his house with him.
Right.
I mean, they right across the street. She could have screamed and yelled and got somebody's attention.
Makes sense. But, yeah.
So maybe that did happen.
The baseball thing.
Yeah. Because then she would still trust him enough for thinking that he was just trying to get her help.
Okay. Well, here's my thing. And I brought this up earlier. Okay, we've been kids playing sports, you know, being athletic, and, you know, you're playing sports, you're playing soccer, you're playing baseball, and you kick a ball, you hit a ball, and it hits one of your fucking friends. They ain't fucking paying attention. Bam, right off the fucking head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it just happens.
Right.
Okay, if you do that, okay, and it's just you and this other girl, you and one other person. And she throws the ball, boom, you hit that motherfucker line drive right to her the old eye hole. Okay. Why would you not take her back home?
Yeah, I mean, she lived right across the street.
And they were playing just right across the street, right?
I don't know, were they at some park?
I thought they were, they weren't far from their home. Why would you not just take her back and be like, oh, you know, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, I'm so sorry. You know, this happened and, you know.
Right. I agree with that.
That would seem like the logical thing to do.
On his, yes. I mean, I was looking at it from her aspect because I'm just saying that she trusted him enough to go to his house with him.
So maybe the baseball thing did happen.
Yeah.
Okay. So. She goes to the house, and I think that's where we're at here.
Afterwards, he hit her with the baseball bat and then stabbed her 11 times. There was no evidence of sexual assault, but Maddie's body was found naked from the waist down.
All right. Okay, so it was an innocent thing.
I think it was an innocent game of baseball.
I think it was an innocent throw and hit kind of thing between two childhood friends, neighbors, okay. And
he's 14 years old.
Yeah,
taking care of this girl that he just smacked in the face with a baseball.
But all of a sudden decides, hey,
gets a little friendly.
You think he's trying to get a little friendly? That's why there were no clothes on the bottom half. Right.
And then it got out. She fought back, and he killed her.
Interesting, because that's not mentioned in this. Because I think they think is maybe a rage killing.
Yeah, he was pissed off.
He was pissed off, but why was he pissed off?
Because she rejected him.
Exactly. Boy, man, we got Mrs. Dredd's the sleuth. All right.
By the time his father had come home, Josh had stuffed Maddie's body underneath his waterbed mattress, and there it sat for several days decomposing.
7 fucking days under this fucking mattress, okay, rotting, decomposing. That's fucking brutal. That did not smell after like 3 days.
I'm sure it had to smell somewhat.
The mom comes on. I think you hear the mom mention, or maybe he just talks about the mom coming into the room. But you didn't smell that shit beforehand?
Police began the search party, and after days of turning up empty, they decided to call it off. 7 days after Maddie's disappearance, Josh's mom, Missy Phillips, was cleaning his bedroom when she noticed a wet spot on the floor and thought his waterbed was leaking. She lifted up the mattress to try and locate the leak, and that's when she discovered Maddie's body. In horror, she ran next door and called the police. Josh was arrested in school that day. He confessed to killing Maddie, explaining the fear of his abusive father's reaction as the motive for murdering the little girl.
That was the motive. His father's abusive actions.
Yeah. Because that would definitely make me kill somebody.
Right. And stuff a dead girl under your waterbed.
I mean, look at the holes in there, though, because why would you take her into the house knowing that your dad don't want anybody in there?
Well, that's where he got that from. And that's why I don't understand. That's why I think that what we're hearing, just this little overview, okay, of these child killers, minors, that, man, this is a deep one right here. Because there's just a lot of questions. Could make a whole podcast out of this.
Yeah,
because
he's got all kinds of holes in his story.
Yeah, and waterbed.
Maybe. That was just decomposition juice.
In 1999, Joshua Phillips was convicted of first-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison without the eligibility for parole. Number two, Cindy and Shirley.
It's Laverne and Shirley.
Not in this case.
I know.
15-year-old Cindy Collier and 14-year-old
Shamil Hop and Pepper Court. I don't know.
Shirley Wolf had a history of abuse and brush-ins with the law. Cindy was abused her whole life and raped before she turned 10. By the time she was 15, her rap sheet included theft, burglary, drug abuse, and assault. Shirley also had a similar disruptive past.
She's an overachiever.
She's over something.
Her own father, uncle, and paternal grandfather had sexually abused her from the time she was an infant. By the time she was 6, she ran away from home several times until eventually authorities took notice and her father was arrested for the abuse. After he was convicted,
her father, uncle, nephew, cousin.
She was sent into various foster homes and detention centers. After meeting only 8 hours before at a bus stop, the girls bonded over their mutual life circumstances and decided they would run away together. They spent time matching a plan, which involved killing a stranger, then stealing their car.
Perfect.
Both girls dyed their hair as a feeble attempt at disguising themselves and went around Cindy's old neighborhood, Auburn Greens in California. They began knocking on doors, and while the majority didn't let them inside their home, finally, one elderly woman did.
A fucking 85-year-old woman.
Yep.
At the goodness of her heart, was waiting for her son to go play fucking bingo. Get that fucking cat out of the insane asylum. It's right behind you. This woman, cats are not allowed in the insane asylum. My dog is. Cats are not. So, yeah, this 85-year-old woman just, takes and opens the door to Cindy and Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
Not your father's fucking Laverne and Shirley. Cindy Williams played Shirley, which is weird. Cindy and Shirley.
I don't see any.
Cindy Williams, the actress that played Shirley on Laverne and Shirley. I'm making fucking connections here. That's what we do
doing
here.
Something.
I am. This woman just opens the fucking door, and then next thing you know, and all they want to do
is... It wasn't next thing you know, because they sat there for a while.
No, they did. It was like a fucking hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of a sudden, this elderly woman, this grandmother's son calls, get ready to pick her up, fucking bingo.
Anna Brackett, an 85-year-old with grandkids of her own, allowed them in. The girls asked to use the phone, and they chatted with the victim for about an hour. At some point, Anna answered a phone call from her son, who was en route to drive her off to a bingo game. Knowing they had little time, the girls attacked. Cindy grabbed a knife, tossed it to Shirley, who immediately began stabbing Brackett in the back over and over again. Anna begged for her life, but the girls kept going until she was dead. After the kill, the girls ransacked the place, looked for cash, and grabbed two keys from the counter. The keys they took were the wrong ones for the 1970 Dodge in the garage, and so the girls ran on foot near Highway 49. Oddly enough, Carl Brackett, the son of the victim, saw the two girls while he was on his way to his mother's home. Once he got there, he discovered the grisly scene. Eyewitnesses eventually came forward, which led to the girls becoming suspects. Once confronted by police, Shirley immediately admitted to the crime, while Cindy didn't say anything. During interrogation, Cindy was confronted with Shirley's confession, and she began to laugh. She then said, "To honestly tell you the truth, we didn't feel any badness. Then after we did it, we wanted to do another one. We just wanted to kill someone, just for fun."
All right, that right there is a fucking psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're talking about doing a really horrible drug for the first time. Like doing heroin or something, you know, to honestly tell you the truth, we didn't feel any badness. No, you felt goodness. Then after we did it, we wanted to do another one. We just wanted to kill someone just for fun. Psychopath cunts.
Both girls were convicted of the crime, with Cindy serving the maximum of 9 years for a juvenile. She was then paroled in 1992 and has had no further run-ins with the law. As for Wolf, she was freed on June 30th, 1995, and has been arrested several times since for petty crimes. Number 1, Tyler Hadley. July 16th, 2011. Everyone at school could tell it was going to be a big party. 17-year-old Tyler Hadley from Port St. Lucie, Florida, kept telling his friends he'd be throwing a rager, but no one thought it would happen. He'd been getting in trouble lately, and as a result, his parents were being extra strict with him. But Tyler had no intentions of letting his parents get in the way of his fun. Around 5 p.m., several hours before the party, Tyler popped some ecstasy, grabbed a hammer from the garage, and marched inside his family room where his mom, Mary Jo, was on the computer working.
Sounds like a recipe for just a good old fucking family time. Son pumps some ecstasy, grabs a fucking hammer, and then decides, "I think I want to talk to Mom and Dad."
Tyler stood behind her, and as she turned to face him, he struck her on top of the head. Hearing her screams, Tyler's dad, Blake, came rushing into the room.
Fucking brutal!
When Blake asked why he was doing this, Tyler's only reply was, "Why the hell not?"
Are you fucking kidding me? No, it's not even the worst part of it, okay? The worst part of it is why he did this.
He then bludgeoned his father to death, finished off his mother, and dragged their bodies to their bedroom, where he began piling clothes and furniture on top of them. He locked the bedroom door and cleaned for about 3 hours, just in time for his guests to arrive. By 11 p.m., the party was in full swing. Close to 60 kids were inside the house that night. They were playing beer pong, stubbing cigarettes everywhere, smashing bottles, and trashing the house. A few of them later recalled sitting down at the computer, taking turns playing songs on YouTube, and noticing a brown, sticky substance, which they assumed to be Coke or beer. Later on, it was found to be Mary Jo's blood, which Tyler had tried to get rid of using coffee granules. The party kept going while Tyler's behavior bobbed from panicky to gleeful. At some point, he told his best friend what happened, detailing how he killed his parents, even showing him a bloody footprint in the garage before ultimately revealing their bodies in the bedroom. By 4:40 a.m., the police arrived. His friend Michael Mandel had called Crime Stoppers to report the murder, and Tyler was arrested when the police discovered the horrifying sight. Tyler's explanations for the crime varied. First, he blamed medications he was taking, then said his father was not his real dad, and insinuated he was physically abusive. Neither of these were true. Finally, he admitted that it was because he wanted to throw a party, but knew his parents would object to it. Tyler Hadley was originally charged with first-degree murder and sentenced to life with no chance of parole. But as of 2016, his case will be open for resentencing due to the Supreme Court 2012 ruling that barred minors from receiving life imprisonment without parole.
All right, there we go. That was our five. Eric Smith, Christopher Pittman, Joshua Phillips, Cindy and Shirley, and Tyler Hadley. I think the one, and you know, everybody will notice, they're like, damn, Otis, you didn't cut the whole Tyler segment out and interrupt like you normally do. No, because I think that is something you really need to, you know, listen to. There's a lot of things going on there.
Right.
I want you to start with what you think was going on in Tyler's mind. For one, he was high on fucking X.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of course, if he had X, I'm sure, you know, he's probably smoking some weed. You know, I mean, I don't know what kind of neighborhood he was living in. Maybe it was a blow neighborhood. Maybe he was doing some coke. You know, I mean, there could be anything going on. He had X.
Or could have just been the ecstasy.
Could have just been the X. What do you think is going on with the whole Tyler one? Because that one, with another one, really intrigues me the most.
I don't know. I think maybe we don't know what was going on in his childhood. We don't know how his family life really was, or...
You think it was bad enough to, you know, just, I mean, like, kill your fucking parents because you wanted to have a party? Well, I mean, was this kid fucking bullied because, you know, his friends didn't think it would fucking happen? Like you said, did he try this before? And nobody, you know, it didn't happen.
Right.
So he let everyone down.
Right. I mean, thing of getting bullied or anything.
So it's like social.
He had something to prove.
Social status. Is that what you're saying? Some sort of, teenage social status.
Right.
You know, to drive him to, you know, high on X, fucking kill
your
parents.
Parents
with a fucking hammer.
I mean, I went to school with a guy who killed his parents.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
I was friends with him in elementary school.
Bobby.
Yeah.
Who has also, you know, been on the podcast. Yeah. You guys both went to school with him.
Yeah, we were friends. We used to talk on the phone and stuff quite a bit. Once I moved out of Park Lane, I didn't have contact with really anybody from Park Lane after.
Can you tell us about this story? Is there legal repercussions?
I don't know.
We may not even get into Mary Bell. That may be another episode.
I mean, I don't honestly know all the details.
Bobby would be
the one asking more about it and to ask more because they stayed friends.
What do you know?
From what he's told me, that he said that he had talked to him that day, that he was out working on his car.
Yeah.
And shit and stuff, and went in and shot his mom and dad.
Yeah, just decided to shoot him.
Yeah. And meeting him, you would never think that he was the type of person who would, just real laid back.
That's what Bobby always said anytime that this was brought up. And it's not brought up a lot, you know.
Yeah,
but
he's still in prison. He's supposed to go up for parole, but.
Damn shame. Damn shame.
It happens.
You know, Tyler, you know, Hadley, this last one, I think that it may have had, you know, a lot to do with a social status type deal.
Yeah, and he felt that the only way out would be to kill him.
Well,
save face.
Yes, he had, it meant so much to him. Maybe his self-esteem was, you know, below rock bottom.
So do you think that he felt guilty? That's the reason that he confided in his best friend, told his best friend everything that happened?
That is weird. That is strange, man. I mean, it's almost because they said it went from kind of a worry type, you know, he was kind of worried about what he had done earlier, to more of a gleeful.
Yeah, because you know about all the drugs that he's been doing, though. Exactly. He just killed his parents.
Right.
He's going to go on overload.
And then all of a sudden, you know, he's kind of, you know, okay with everything. He's partying. He's having a good time, even though his dead parents that he's responsible for are right upstairs buried under mattresses and pieces of furniture and clothes and shit like that, you know. To think that it could come strictly from just I have to prove myself in my little social clique, to think that could be that strong is horrifying in and of itself. Outside of what, you know, Tyler did. Outside of that, just to think if that was the whole motivation, that's, I don't know, that's horrifying to me. The fact that somebody would consider even entertaining the thought
of killing
their fucking parents because they have to make sure that their friends think they're cool because they've, you know, maybe said they were going to do things in the past. Maybe he was kind of popular, but wasn't popular with the popular kids, quote unquote. You know what I mean? And maybe he felt that he had to fucking prove himself, not by killing his fucking parents, but making sure that, at, you know, this party would fucking happen. And, you know, to think that that could be the basis of that particular, you know, murder, is to me horrifying. It's terrifying.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. It's,
That would play so much of an impact. You know, we hear about, as we mentioned in the very beginning of the podcast, and I asked you, and I don't know if you've come up with what is worse, and, you know, your opinions on either or, but a child murdering someone else or a child killing themselves.
Oh, no, it's kind of hard to decide.
It really is. When you hear these stories, it's like there's so many things that you could say, okay? I think it was with Christopher Pittman, who was on the Zoloft, and the, you know, Paxil and whatnot.
Yeah.
There could have been some things that were done to try and correct the damage that this medication had done to his already fragile mind, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It was not, you know, the opposite happened. So, you know,
I'd almost have to go with, I think it's worse to kill another person
than yourself.
And the reason I say that is because...
That's I can understand.
You're not only you're not only taking somebody else's life, in a sense you're taking your own life, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to get life in prison.
Right.
You're never going to see anything outside of those walls.
You're going to get fucking caught. You're not going to have a life after that murder, you know, unless you take your own life.
Right.
then you don't deal with that reality.
And then with that case, you have two sets of unintentional victims, like
right.
family members of each side. And
now, and I understand where you're going with this, because I wanted to get back to this question in the last, you know, couple minutes of the podcast. Because it is a very, very, you know, hard question, hard, you know, question to, you know, try and answer. But I think your, you know, opinion and what you're thinking is probably right along with what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, if you kill yourself, which, you know, it's hard to think of, and we're talking about, like I said, 11, 12-year-old kids killing themselves. We've unfortunately had a family member, in-laws, that have, succumbed to that. Young girl was 13. And very, very, very hard to even, you know, think about that. So it is very, very hard to, you know, okay, do you want a child murderer? Do you want a child suicide? Do you want a child that reacts to being bullied by killing the ones who bullied him?
Yeah, or, like mass shootings.
Right. Or do you want him to hang himself in his fucking closet? You know, I mean, it just seems like, okay, it doesn't have to come down to either or, in my opinion. And this is how I'm going to wrap my opinion up of it. I think, and no, we're not getting to Mary Bell, because I think all these little cases that, you know, we talked about, and we don't know a whole lot about. I just came across it and was like, man, this be really awesome to sit and talk about. Mary Bell will be for another episode. You know, a lot of things could have been done to prevent both a shooting and a, you know, possible suicide.
Right.
And that is one, recognition. Okay, two, don't drug your fucking kid. Okay, don't put him on things that, you know, how idiotic is it to say, oh, yes, I'm depressed, I'm going to take a medication that side effect will make me depressed.
Yeah.
That just doesn't make, but people are like, yes, yes, oh, it doesn't happen to everyone. Come on. Just don't fucking take it, okay? There's other ways you can deal with it.
Right.
Other fucking ways you can deal with this. You know, hey, just smoke some weed. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I'm telling you, I've been smoking a lot of weed. It's helped a lot of depression in my life. Smoke some fucking weed. Don't kill anybody. Don't kill your fucking self.
Good point.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Smoke some fucking weed. All right. Oh, my goodness. This is Dreads. This has been fun.
Thank God our kids are grown.
Man, I mean, but this has been fun. This has been a fun episode. We did not get to Mary Bell. That will be for another episode, apparently. There was so much to talk about with the five terrifying child killers that we talked about. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We will talk to you next week here in the Insane Asylum.
To do is play with you. Please come and play with me. I'm so lonely. Why do you seem so scared? I know things no one knows. We're going to die.